This is issue number 779 of the Secret Identity podcast, and today in What's New, we're going to talk about Marvel and DC's initiatives to celebrate Jack Kirby's 100th. We're also going to talk about a movie featuring Silver Sable and Black Cat. Our comics this week will be Batman number 22, Weapon X number 2, and Flash number 22. And our summer reading project, The Summer of Dread, continues this week with our second installment of the Judge Dredd case files, Robot Wars.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
The Human Torch was denied a bank loan.
This is all your fault, you!
Get that finger out of your ear. You don't know where that finger's been.
Why do you keep staring at me?
Seconds to comply.
God, clean the whole fun.
And welcome everybody to Secret Identity. This is Brian Letenry here, as always, with the lovely, the talented, the beautiful, the sick, but hanging in there.
Yes.
Committed to the cause, Matthew A. Herring. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Matthew.
I am feeling that voice just getting worse.
You are feeling it. We're going to get through this, and we're going to get through this with some news in celebration of Jack Kirby, Matthew.
Oh, man.
Marvel Comics is going to pay tribute to comic book master Jack King Kirby on the 100th anniversary of his birth, August 28th, 2017, with a round of introductory comics featuring some of his greatest Marvel creations. And I'm going to read off to you these $1 comics that Marvel is going to put out in celebration of what would be the 100th birthday of Jack Kirby. These are called the True Believer comics, the 12 $1 True Believer comics that will be coming in August. Black Panther number 1, reprinting Black Panther number 1 and the Captain America story from Tales of Suspense.
I think number 22.
I think it said number 98.
I mean, oh, 98.
Tales of Suspense number 98.
I'm thinking 98. Of Marvel Triple Action or whatever.
They have so many of
Marvel
those,
Marvel Double Feature. That's what I was thinking.
Avengers Captain America Lives Again, number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Groot, number 1. Reprinting the Groot story from Tales to Astonish, number 13. And the Zemu story from Journey into Mystery, number 62.
That was when Groot was a big tree, literally a big space-invading tree.
Yes. Thor versus Hulk, number 1. The Mighty Thor, number 1. Captain America, number 1. Eternals, number 1. Avengers, Devil Dinosaur, number 1. Nick Fury, number 1. Inhumans, number 1. Iron Man, number 1. Ant-Man and the Wasp, number 1. And these aren't all number 1s. Like, the Iron Man, number 1, is reprinting the Iron Man stories from Tales of Suspense, number 40 and 41. So these are all number 1s in terms of one-shots. Ant-Man and the Wasp, reprinting Ant-Man story from Tales to Astonish from 1959, which is number 44. And Marvel is also going to be releasing 6 Spider-Man True Believer titles this summer as well.
Wow.
So big plans for Marvel to release a bunch of discounted issues that celebrate some of the creations of Jack Kirby. DC Comics, Matthew, not to be outdone.
Good.
Is celebrating the 100th anniversary of the birth of the masterful comic book creator Jack King Kirby this August with a series of 6 Kirby one-shot specials featuring characters that Kirby created during 2 stints with DC. Kirby first worked for DC during the early 40s and later in the early 70s after he left Marvel Comics, after co-creating with Stan Lee the majority of the major characters in the Marvel Universe. The Kirby one-shots were announced last week, but DC now has released information on the creative teams involved in the production of the 6 one-shots, which are all 48-page full-color books with a cover price of $4.99.
I like that. You're getting a lot of pages.
Let's see what we're getting here. It says DC Comics first hired Jack Kirby in 1941 in large part because of the success he had, the success of Kirby and Joe Simon's Captain America, which was a hit for Timely Comics. Kirby and Simon created three of the one-shots feature characters that Kirby and Simon created or revamped for DC during the 40s. The most interesting of this group is Howard Chaykin's The Newsboy Legion and Boy Commandos Special, which includes both of the Kid Gang comic teams that Simon and Kirby created for DC, the Newsboy Legion and Boy Commandos. Now, are you familiar with both of those? Yeah. Simon and Kirby created the template for this sort of patriotic Kid Gang comic with the Sentinels of Liberty, which is the Young Allies, that they previously created for Timely. Chaykin is the auteur here, writing and illustrating the comic as well as providing the cover. Simon and Kirby also took over DC's Manhunter, starting in Adventure Comics number 73 and lasting through 80. Keith Giffen and Dan DiDio are writing the Manhunter special, with Nick Bradshaw providing the pencils. A bonus Etrigan the Demon short story by Sam Humphries and Klaus Janson is included along with the Golden Age reprint. Let's see what other ones. It looks like there is a Sandman special, a Dark Side special, the final one is, which is due out on the 30th, the Black Racer and Shiloh Norman special number one, which features Kirby's Avatar of Death from the New Gods, the Black Racer, and Shiloh Norman, aka Mr. Miracle, who is literally running from death in a comic chase across the galaxies. Reginald Hudlin has provided the story, with Dennis Cowan and Bill Sienkiewicz handling the art chores, and a classic Kirby Fourth World tale to be included as well. The New Gods special number one is going to be by Shane Davis and Michelle Dalecki. Let's see, Dark Side special I mentioned, which is written by Mark Evanier with art by Scott Collins. And is there a backup story in this one? It includes an OMAC backup written by Sam Humphries with art by Steve Root. So pretty cool that Marvel and DC are both putting out stuff to celebrate Kirby's 100th.
Because he has, I mean, obviously his imprint on Marvel is all over the place, but DC, a lot of people forget that he was over there in the 40s. He really got Green Arrow going. He was somebody that did that. He also, him and Joe Simon did a ton of old romance comics, which I've got to get the trade collections of those.
In very interesting news, Matthew, to change the subject, a movie that I didn't even know existed now has a director. Gina Prince Bythewood, who wrote and directed The Secret Life of Bees, will direct Silver and Black, Sony's Spider-Man offshoot that centers on characters Silver Sable and the Black Cat. Hello.
That's interesting.
That's freaking awesome. Matt Tolmach and Amy Pascal are producing the project, which is planning for a fall start, so it's going to start production this fall. Chris Yost, who worked on the upcoming Marvel movie Thor Ragnarok, is writing the most recent draft. Lisa Joy, the co-creator of HBO's Westworld, also worked on the script. Silver Sable, created by Tom DeFalco and Ron Frenz in 1985, is a mercenary who runs a company that hunts war criminals. The character has been both antagonist and ally to Spider-Man. Black Cat, an acrobatic cat burglar whose real name is Felicia Hardy, has a long and tangled romantic history with Spider-Man in the comics. The character was cut from scripts for the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy. That's a shame.
Interesting.
And a Felicia Hardy, played by Felicity Jones, briefly appeared in Amazing Spider-Man 2, though no Black Cat connection was ever made explicit. Sony is rebooting Spider-Man this summer with Spider-Man Homecoming and hopes to launch a slate of Spider-Man-related movies. The first project, Venom, is already off and running, having snagged Tom Hardy.
Whoa, very good.
Or Bane. As star and Ruben Fleischer as director. While Spider-Man is firmly in Marvel's cinematic universe, Sony's offshoots will stand apart. Prince Bythewood won acclaim and awards with her feature debut, the 2000 drama Love and Basketball. The writer-director has had her feet mostly planted in the drama world and on top of helming Secret Life of Bees, also directed the romantic drama Beyond the Lights, which starred Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Nate Parker. She co-created the crime drama Shots Fired, which is currently airing on Fox and is due to direct the pilot for Cloak and Dagger, Freeform's television series based on Marvel Comics Teen Heroes. So I am super excited about that because I did not even know that was a thing.
Came out of nowhere.
And I am on board for that. So there you go, Matthew. That is your news for this week. Now we're going to jump into our comics and you're going to talk about the first of two comics that continue a story we started a few weeks ago.
Yes, this is The Button Part 3 from Batman number 22. The Button is the, for me at least, and for I think a lot of fans, the highly anticipated team up between Batman and Flash. Two of my favorite, they're my two favorite DC characters, always have been. And what is going on is the button, the smiley face button with the bullet hole bleeding top that was made famous in The Watchmen, has ended up in the DC universe. It ended up on Batman's computer desk. It's on his desk. He is analyzing it, trying to figure out what it means, not knowing the connection to The Watchmen, because there's going to be this huge reveal someday, maybe, about what's going on. And Professor Zoom showed up and grabbed it. And when Professor Zoom showed up, he went into Batman's he was in the Batcave and he ripped up the letter that Thomas Wayne from the Flashpoint world wrote to him, which he cherished more than anything.
Which is like the absolute.
You don't do that.
That's brutal.
Yes. So all of a sudden,
that would almost make him an arch enemy of mine.
Yeah.
That day.
Yeah. You have now become worse than the Joker ever.
Are the new Joker.
Yes. So we start out this issue with Thomas Wayne in the Flashpoint world sitting in a chair looking down and just really sad and really upset at what is going on. And he's thinking, you know, I would do anything I could to save my son. Because what had happened is he's now become the Batman. It was the mother and Bruce that died at the hands of the gunman. And as he is talking, he's thinking, he's like, my enemy comes for me right now. Wonder Woman and Aquaman finally agreed on something and they've sent their soldiers to put me down. Forgetting that in the Flashpoint world, a lot of that trigger was because of a war between Atlantis and Themyscira that spilled into the rest of the world, that put two kingdoms against each other, and then realizing that together they could destroy the world and take over the world, that's where they did. I forgot about that part of it. And all of a sudden, you see a bunch of Wonder Woman-looking dudettes and some Aquaman-looking dudes now breaking into Wayne Manor. So he's sitting there thinking, he's got his hands on a button ready to blow the whole place up. And all of a sudden, there's a flash of lightning. And Batman's like, Flash, this place, I know it anywhere. I've known it since I was a child, since I came down here. Now, he is in the cave of his father, but this was the cave that he used to go to as a little kid. So this doesn't have all the tech and mech and the big button or the big penny and the dinosaur and all the computers there. This is a very basic basically a crime lab. So he realizes and sees it. And then Thomas Wayne looks up. And he's like, where are we? And then you see Batman or Thomas get up and looks and says, son, can't be. And then for a couple pages, we are having the two of them looking at each other going, I can't believe this is happening. I don't know what's going on. And Flash is like, this might not be the best place to be. And then you get Thomas, who grabs a hold of the Flash, grabs him by the neck, and is ready to punch him. And Flash is like, look, you've got to give me a chance to explain. Something's going wrong. It's been months since the timeline had repaired since I left, because he remembers the Flash.
Yep.
He's the one who gave Flash the note to give to Bruce. And he knows all about these different worlds, but he says, there's something that's keeping Flashpoint going. There's something going on, and the reverse Flash came here for something. There's something going on, and I don't know what it is. And as Flash is looking around for clues, that has become the secondary story when you have two Batmen looking at each other, one so miserable and sad because they lost the other one.
Right.
That is the thing that you really are taking out of this. And he's like, look, you know, you guys got to get out of here right now. You don't have a minute to look for some clues about something because something's going on. And Flash likes, he's like, look, it only take me a minute. What do I got? What's going on? He says, because of them. And then you see a bunch of the Themyscirian and Atlantean soldiers coming down, saying in the name of the queen and king of New Themyscira, be prepared to die. And then Thomas Wayne pulls out a gun and cocks it back and says, you know what? You guys get out of here. I'm going to take care of this. Bruce throws a batarang at him and says, no, we're leaving together. And he goes, no, you and that Flash guy are leaving. I'm staying here. You can't do that. So then all of a sudden a battle happens. And the coolest picture, I'll show you, Brian, the coolest picture is the two of them putting on their cowls.
Yep.
Getting ready for action. What I loved about this was it really brought back the great team battles of Earth 1, Earth 2.
That was created in Flashpoint.
Yes.
Who would have thought that the Thomas Wayne Batman would become immediately like so, it would resonate with people so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like you love him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as the fight is going on, Flash is realizing they've got to get out of there. The only way they can do it is to jump on the cosmic treadmill that got him there. The thing is in pieces, so Flash is trying to build it. And as this is going on, you've got the fight that they've taken him down, but they realize that there's going to be more soldiers coming. Bruce and Thomas have a couple moments where they're talking, and you know, he's like, so can't believe that you became Bat. And he's like, well, you know, I was afraid of bats as a kid, but not anymore. And they have this moment that is really sad and touching. And Bruce is like, come with me, Father, please. And he reaches out and Thomas grabs him, pushes him away, pushes him on the cosmic treadmill. And he's like, Flash, you promised me that you would save my son. You promised me that. You need to go. So Batman is screaming, let me go, Barry. And he's like, no, I got to get him out. I got to get you out of here. So they start running and you see the world start to slowly go away. And as they go away, he's telling them, Thomas is saying, don't be Batman anymore. Find happiness. Find some peace. You know, we have seen each other. He says, be a father for your son in a way I never could be for you. Let the Batman die with me. And Bruce is like, we can save you. And then all of a sudden they disappear. And then Thomas looks down and says, you have saved me. And then pushes the button, blows up the, He had the trigger. He threw the trigger and was going to blow up everything and kill everybody. But he started to have these memories of him and Bruce's young kid, as Bruce is a young kid. And then he's saying, we rise. And then you see him run into this abyss where you don't know where he's going. And then Batman is back on with Flash going, we need to go back. And he goes, nope, we can't go back. We can only go forward. And then they see something coming from behind them. And it is Professor Zoom, Reverse Flash, who runs by them. And Flash is like, you're alive? He goes, oh, yeah, don't worry. You can't slow me down. And then as he runs by him, you see that he has the button. And he says, I'm heading to a place that I'm going to really destroy because nobody has ever seen anybody like me. And I've got the power of the button. And that is where that issue ends. So we will talk about the next part after you talk about your book, but I'll give you the creative team on this one, Joshua Williams and Tom King. And the artist is Jason Fabok, who is freaking amazing. He has got to be, and I've said this I think a year ago when he first popped on the scene doing Detective Comics, he is probably the best artist in the industry right now. Love this guy.
Well, we're going to hop over to Marvel and talk about the second issue of Weapon X, you know, one of the new titles that spun out of the whole X-Men and Inhumans event. We talked about Royals in the last episode. Now we're talking about Weapon X. And what happened in the first issue of Weapon X, and this series is written by Greg Pak, penciled by Greg Land, inks by Jay Leiston, colors by Frank D'Armata, and letters by our good buddy Joe Caramagna. The editor on this book is Mark Paniccia. So what happened is that in the first issue of this series, Wolverine got attacked by something that he couldn't detect, which is that doesn't usually happen in Wolverine. They are adamantium cyborgs with razor-sharp claws. It was a couple of hikers that came up on him in the woods, and he gave them directions and didn't sense any danger or anything, and then they turned around and attacked him. Well, it seems that these cyborgs have been sent out after a bunch of members of X-Force or the Weapon X, you know, program. And so Lady Deathstrike has already been taken, I believe, and they were coming after Logan. And so he went to meet up with Sabretooth because he knew they'd be coming after him soon enough. And so now we start off here in San Francisco Peaks, Arizona. And you have James Proudstar, who is Warpath. And he's kind of hanging out in the mountains, relaxing. And one of his friends is texting him, wanting to know where he is. And he's kind of contemplating what he's doing with himself right now. He's thinking, you know, I could be helping the X-Men rebuild. I could be doing this. I could be doing that. But right now, I'm kind of just here hanging out. And all of a sudden, he hears a helicopter. And he looks over and he sees that there are a group of horses that are being driven by a helicopter. Like a helicopter is sort of chasing after them, getting them to run in one direction. And he's like, what the heck is going on? So he goes and checks this out. He's like, harassing Mustangs? This is illegal. Only the Bureau of Land Management is authorized to round up wild horses, and that's not a Bureau of Land Management chopper. So these guys are, I don't know what, they're doing something illegal, but they're also scaring the crap out of these horses, and I'm going to get them away from there. So he starts chasing down this helicopter. Now, I did not realize that Warpath can fly, but apparently Warpath can fly. And he has a healing factor, and he's super strong, and he's got those two super cool knives that I always used to see on the on the covers of the X-Force stuff. So he ends up jumping into the air, and he cuts the main rotor right off the top of this helicopter. And he jumps in the cockpit, and he brings this thing down. And when he finally, the smoke clears, and he's going to see who the heck was doing this, he opens he gets to the front seat, and it looks like a crash test dummy. It's basically a fake pilot and the chopper was being flown by remote. And so here he is thinking that he just saved these horses from this chopper that was chasing them. Well, he turns around and all the freaking horses are adamantium cyborgs. And they turn into these hideous robotic beasts that are now charging after him. And their hooves are like, you know, Terminator 2 liquid metal, you know, stabby things. And so they end up impaling him and coming after him. And he gets attacked by them. Now you see this place called the Weapon X Satellite Bio Refinery, where two 20-somethings are watching a monitor and watching the attack of Warpath on this monitor. And the guy who is their boss is a little bit older-looking gentleman, and he's saying, yep, we're focusing on Target 4 right now, James Proudsar, a.k.a. Warpath. And he's saying, you know, I want you guys to prep the rest of the tanks because we're going to be bringing them all in. And you see that they have tanks put behind them for each one of the members of the Weapon X program. So you've got Logan, you've got Sabretooth, you've got Warpath, and you see that they've already captured someone else. So now we cut over to the Mount Rainier National Park in Washington State, where Sabretooth and Logan are embroiled in a battle with three of these things. Three of these cyborgs are battling them, and the whole time that they're fighting with them, Sabretooth is basically yelling at Wolverine saying, you freaking brought these things to me. What did I was minding my own business, and you brought these things to me. And Wolverine saying, look, they attacked us separately before. Clearly, they were going to come after you at some point. I just figured that the two of us together might actually be able to fight them off. So now we cut over to Washington, D.C., and you see that there's another location where someone is monitoring the attack that's happening on Wolverine and Logan. So clearly, there's a much larger conspiracy going on here where an effort is being made to round up anyone who's been involved with the Weapon X program. And they're sending these cyborgs after them. And what Sabretooth and Logan are starting to realize is that these things that are attacking them are faster and stronger than the things were the last time they attacked them. And what is happening is that they even smell like Wolverine and Sabretooth. And they're starting to piece together that these things, these people, whoever are behind this, took tissue samples of each of them and are using them to make these cyborgs better. So every time they send a wave of cyborgs after them, they're more like Wolverine and Sabretooth. They're more like each person that they've come across. And so now they end up having to lure these things into a canyon and take them out one by one. But they're watching a couple of them from above, and they see that these things can generate like fake skin. They can generate clothes. So they can go from looking like a Terminator to looking like a human in a couple of seconds. And they end up, a couple of them end up getting away. And Wolverine and Logan are like, we got to follow them because clearly they're going to be going after other people and we need to know who's behind this. So now you have Logan and Sabretooth who are deciding to hunt these things that have been hunting them. And you cut back to where the people were monitoring what was going on, and you have the supervisor there who's basically saying, we're going to end up getting them all tonight because we already got Warpath. And you turn the page and you see that Warpath is in fact captured already. So I believe they have Warpath and Lady Deathstrike. Then they're going after Domino, and they're going to bring in Wolverine and Logan as well. So we still don't know who these people are. We don't know what their agenda is. We just know that they are using these guys to make the cyborgs that they're building better. So you can kind of guess that maybe they're reviving some sort of program where they're going to take the best qualities of each of these Weapon X, you know, past experiments and use them to make the best version of these soldiers or whatever. So that's the way the second issue ends. But it's been a fun series. And like I said before, I'm not the biggest fan of Greg Land's artwork, but this story moves very quickly and it's enough of a mystery to see who's kind of behind it that it keeps me wanting to pick up the rest of the series.
I almost picked up Generation X number one.
Oh, I have that one waiting for me at the comic
because I like the look of it. I like the way it felt. And I've been reading X-Men Blue.
I am reading X-Men Blue as well. And I have Generation X, the original series. I have them all, I believe.
Yep.
So that might be a fun out of the long box to do at some point.
Yeah. Once we get out of the Summer of Dread.
Oh, it's all Dread all summer.
So my next book is going to be part four of The Button, and this is coming from Flash number 22. I got an alternate cover, which I wished I didn't get because it kind of gave me a big clue as to who was going to be appearing in the book. I would have rather have gone in a little
cold. Is that
what
they put aside for you, or did you pick that?
That's the one I picked. I'm flipping through going, oh. But this is the button part four. Joshua Williams is the writer. Howard Porter is the artist on this one. And so what has been going on? I mean, I don't have to recap because I just talked about it. But we have Flash and Batman who are trying to get back to their world. And the cosmic treadmill has now exploded. And they're kind of lost in time. And they're scattering around. And all of a sudden, Reverse Flash has come by. And he is talking about how he is going to do so much damage. And he's talking about, as he holds the button, he's saying, you know, there is no future, there is no past until I decide to put it all back together. So the button obviously has some power that he really wants. He now knows how to tap into it. And as they are running out of control in this time vortex, Barry is saying, look, we need to catch him. But the problem is we are going to be all over the place. We have no – we're lost. We are like in the ocean right now in this thing. And then Thrawn says to him, your life's about to be undone again. Yep, the trial begins. I have arrived. And you see him land. And as he lands somewhere, he lands on some solid ground. And he starts talking to the button saying, you know, you don't have to be shy. I can feel your power. I can feel your presence. You know, I know something's going on. And, you know, I'm not like them. My existence is the only constant in a sea of possibilities. So Reverse Flash is becoming very delusional with his own worth, his own power. But that button is obviously speaking to him and sent him somewhere. And as he looks up, you see him have this panicky look on his face, and you see like this blue cloud kind of come around him. And he's like, wait, wait, I don't know. Please, I don't want to. And we can't say die because he, all of a sudden something happens and he gets engulfed in this power. This light engulfs him, starts to rip him apart. And you see, as he falls to the ground, the button goes flying up, and Batman's like that scream. He goes, Flash goes, Thrawn, he's gone. And then off camera, you have a little voice that says, Barry, I'm right here. And these guys are kind of panicking about where they're supposed to go. And he's like, Bruce, without the treadmill, we don't have any traction. We've got no direction. And you hear Barry, Barry, and Flash, and Batman's like, listen to the voice. Grab onto it. And he goes, I have no idea where that voice is going to take us. I don't even know where it is. And he says, Barry, I can save you. My name is Jay. And then Barry looks over at Batman and says, Jay, with a question mark. And then you turn the page and you have Jay Garrick show up and grab Batman and Flash. And he says, hang on. And he grabs them and he pulls them through. He runs them through, gets them to a place where all of a sudden they end up in the Batcave, right where they started this adventure. And Batman looks up, goes, it's the cave. My cave, Reverse Flash's body, went back here, wasn't here when we started this, because when Reverse Flash showed up, he came in and destroyed everything. But he says, I'm sorry, he says the Reverse Flash's body is still here. So he knows that it's his cave. And then Barry looks at Jay and goes, who are you? Why did you kill Thrawn? What do you want with us? He goes, I didn't kill anyone, Barry. My name's Jay Garrick. I'm your friend. I'm the Flash. And he's like, Barry, you've got to listen. You've got to remember me. He goes, if you remember me like you remembered Wally, then I can exist again. And he's like, I don't know anything about you, and your name isn't ringing a bell. And he goes, they took everything from me, Barry. I don't know how. I don't know why. Barry, you have to. And he's like, your name. What was your name again? And then he reaches out, and then all of a sudden you see Reverse Flash gets sucked up in that same blue light, which you're thinking it might be the Speed Force, could be the Speed Force because it grabbed him and now it killed Reverse Flash.
When you say blue light, I think Dr. Manhattan.
Interesting. So as the Barry or Jay disappears, and now they're alone in the Batcave, and Barry's like, what just happened? And he said, that man said he knew me the same way Wally did. But I don't know where he came from. I don't know. Maybe another time, maybe another place, another existence, maybe like your father. And then, you know, they kind of look at each other, look at Thrawn's body, and they're kind of wondering what was going on. And then at the last couple pages you have, which was, I thought was a really kind of interesting moment. You've got Barry and you've got Bruce at, Thomas and Martha's gravesite. And he's like, you know, it was really a nice moment and gesture and thing that I got to see my dad, but it was kind of cruel. And Barry goes, well, you know what? Think of it as a gift. He goes, when I lost my mother, I lost everything and it completely destroyed my life. And I understand completely how losing a parent can put you on a certain track and put you in a certain life. And he goes, but you know what? He goes, I don't know. I just don't know what's going on. I don't know what Thrawn was even talking about. And then you have Bruce, who is really kind of talking about the fact that maybe I should give this whole thing up. Maybe I should just stop being Batman and do that. And he goes, look, I'm going to do an autopsy on Thrawn. I'll see what I can find out. Because he says, you know what? I think whoever killed Thrawn was a god. And Bruce is like, well, you know, that's all we got right now. So why don't you go on if you need to pursue this? And then you see on the last page, they walk out and they're both like, look, we can't even pretend to understand what happened. We don't know what's going on, but we do have to understand, Barry, that it wasn't an accident. That guy Jay that showed up, the Reverse Flash, all these things that happened for a reason. It can't all be an accident. And then you turn the page and you've got Bruce. It's a 9-panel and it's that same panel thing where you got Bruce looking down out the window. And so you've got the 3 panels. The first one, there's no words. The second says, don't be Batman. And then the third one says, find happiness. And then all of a sudden, the bat signal shows up in the sky and it says, you don't have to do this for me. Next one, you don't have to do it for your mother. Let the Batman die with me. And then on the 7th panel, Alfred shows up and says, sir, are you going to answer that? And there's nothing. And then you just see Bruce put his head down. And then the last part says, sir. And now you have the button that is just sitting there on the floor and it's got a little blue light around it. And then on top, you see a blue light coming down. And then you see that hand.
Huh.
Dr. Manhattan. I'm sorry. Dr. Manhattan comes down. And in his ghostly way that he speaks, says, why does my perception of time distress you? Everything everything is preordained. Even my responses, we're all puppets, Lori. I'm a puppet who just happens to be able to see his strings. And then you have the epilogue. And it's funny because you turn the page after that, you're like, well, that was kind of anticlimactic before you got to this part. I should have mentioned that with the whole thing, like, well, they went, they came back, they found Flashpoint, they went back, nothing really has changed. And then you turn the page and you have the button. And as you zoom into the button, you've got the yellow and the red, the black hole from the eye, the red from the blood, the yellow from the button.
Yep.
And you zoom all the way in and you see like a drop of blood on the yellow background. And then it zooms all the way into the red, it goes black, you see the red and the yellow again. And as you start to come out a little bit, you see the Superman logo.
Oh, interesting.
So, and then then you have a little quote over there, which I don't want to say because if you haven't read it, I don't want to give anything away. But then you turn the page again and it says Doomsday Clock, Jeff Johns, Gary Frank, Brad Anderson, November 2017. So I could have read this and said, what a bunch of crap. They just built up a stupid event going on in November, but I read that and went, holy crap, there's a huge event coming in November.
So they got you.
Very excited about this. I loved how they had a 2-month event, 4 issues with my 2 favorite characters. I certainly hope that they do that with other characters because I would like to see some of these other things going on as pieces of the puzzle are being put together.
All right, Matthew. Well, those are our new comics for this week, and it is now time to enter the Summer of Dread.
Again.
We are reading the Judge Dredd Complete Case Files, Volume 1. And in the first episode of this summer segment of our summer reading project, we did a few of the stories that were sort of one and done's that kind of gave you a feel for this is who Judge Dredd is, this is how he handles his business, and you got to see a variety of sort of villain of the week stories. This story that we're going to talk about today is about 30 pages long at least, and it is, I believe, referred to as the Robot Wars storyline.
Yep.
And it starts off in, of course, Mega City 1. It says, the people of America's Mega City are used to seeing and using robots in their everyday lives, but the Robot of the Year show still draws them in by the thousands to see the latest developments and some astounding demonstrations. So we start off at a show showcasing robots.
And this demonstration is horrific.
Horrific. Because you have a robot who is on his knees and across his chest. A lot of the robots in this particular series, they have messages or their name that are emblazoned across their chest on like a digital display.
Which harkens to Magnus Robot Fighter.
Yes. So you have – this robot's name is George, and it is a humanoid sort of robot. And you have the robot pleading, saying, no, Master, please don't make me go – please don't make me do it. George does not want to die. And the guy who is leading this demonstration is saying, you can't die if you're not alive, George. Now get into those flames. And he makes the robot go stand in a column of flame. And when it does, the robot says, if it's your wish, Master, George must obey. And George goes in and he starts to melt. And as the crowd's watching, someone's saying, wow, poor thing. It almost looks like he's crying. And as his face melts, it looks like tears are coming down out of his eyes. So what you get from that first page is – people do not treat robots well at all.
Yes.
This is a story that absolutely is about slavery and certainly shows you how it just it has a lot of themes running through it.
You definitely see, because it's a British comic, you can see a lot of the historical black eyes that the British Empire has.
Well, and also even – and again, this is where you also see – and I meant to mention this in the last episode when we talked about the whole the Statue of Judgment.
Yep.
And stuff like that. The judges are not good.
Mm.
Like, you know, we think of Judge Dredd as this like anti-hero character, you know, this ultimate upholder of the law who we kind of root for and stuff like that. But – this is extreme.
This is this is the society. The society
it's very authoritarian.
Is
yes,
very authoritarian.
And so there's a lot of stuff that happens, like even with the main characters, that you're kind of like, I don't like that. It doesn't endear you to Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
Judge Dredd doesn't treat robots very good either.
It certainly isn't a utopian society.
But there is a line that is crossed that Judge Dredd will not abide.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So at the Robot of the Year show, you have basically all this new technology being shown off, but the robots are treated like crap. And you have one of the judges that is there with Dredd. You have Dredd and Diablo who are there. And Diablo is saying, hey, by Stom, Dredd, that robot melted well. And Dredd's like, it was a cruel exhibition. We give robots the will to live and then expect them to die like willing slaves. It's going to spell trouble one day.
Yes.
Little do we know.
Heed my words.
So then we get introduced to the Heavy Metal Kid, Matthew, who
yep.
you spoke about earlier when we were looking at some of your comic books before. You have a guy who is on a robotic wheelchair, and he comes riding into the show and starts shooting the place up. And he ends up shooting a couple of judges as this demonstration is going on for this construction robot called the Heavy Metal Kid. And the recording saying, big loads to shift, demolition, the Heavy Metal Kid is the robot for you. And as that's going on, this guy kind of bursts in and starts shooting people. You have him saying, basically, fire away, judges, you can't penetrate my bulletproof shield. And so he ends up this terrorist that comes into the robot show dispensing all of this poison gas in the place. And the only way that Judge Dredd can stop all of these people from dying is he has to shoot a bullet into the dome, an explosive
yes.
bullet. And so he does, and he manages to save some, but almost all the people that were on the show floor ended up dying.
Yeah.
And Dredd's like, you know, the gas has done its work. Hundreds of innocent citizens dead. You know, the robots are the only ones alive in here right now. I'm going to get that lawbreaker. And so he jumps on a new type of robot, which is called the Bloodhound robot, which has a giant nose on the front of it. And he lets it catch the scent of this criminal, and they take off after it. And the robot's talking to him, saying, we have an easy taskmaster. The lawbreaker's only a mile away. And Dredd's like, just get on with your job. Like the robot's talking to him. He's like, yeah, just get on with it. So he ends up tracking this guy down, and he ends up, again, like he did in a previous episode, blowing up this dude's car, and the guy basically falls to his death. And, you know, Dredd is saying, I wouldn't have caught this lawbreaker without the Bloodhound robot, but that heap of metal down there was a robot too. How long will it be before robots discover how to break the law?
Oh, boy. And this was, if you notice, page count, 1, 2, 3, 4. So Judge Dredd has now 3, 4, 5, has now moved
right.
on to the 5 pages. So he's starting to get a little more popular.
He's now getting a little more popular. Now we get to the next story after Judge Dredd said, well, how long before robots break the law? Well, the very next issue.
Yes.
Because in the very next episode, we have a robot that's called Call Me Kenneth.
Call Me Kenneth.
And Call Me Kenneth is a big old robot who is knocking over an oil factory. because the oil is basically his lifeblood.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying death to the fleshy ones. And he's saying fleshy ones who pit themselves against Call Me Kenneth meet but one fate, oblivion. So as judges are trying to come in, he's blowing up their vehicles and stuff like that. He's taking out all of these dudes. And you have at one point, Call Me Kenneth, the robot, is shoving a judge inside of a robotic trash can that says Keep America Clean. And he's shoving the judge in there. And all of a sudden, I think it might be Dredd that shows up, who's saying, listen, if you surrender now, it could go easy on you. And Kenneth's saying, I'm not going to surrender, fleshy one. I'm stronger, more clever. Oil runs through my pipes. Call Me Kenneth will squeeze you until your juice runs out.
Yep.
And I believe it's Dredd is saying, you don't really want to hurt us humans, do you? And he's saying, you know, no bullet can penetrate. It is Dredd. And Dredd ends up dialing up his gun. I forget what he does. A high explosive is what he dials up on his gun. And he shoots Call Me Kenneth in his robot head. But Call Me Kenneth says, foolish fleshy one, my control circuits are deep within my chest, which is protected by armor plating. You created me to be your slave, but you built me too well. And so now he starts firing at Dredd, and he's firing nails at him. So Dredd is going back and forth with this thing. This thing whips out like a chainsaw blade, comes at Dredd. Dredd barely misses getting sort of cut to ribbons. They're going back and forth, and he ends up, I believe, like shooting a cable out that ends up coming down and electrocuting Call Me Kenneth. So he finally takes Call Me Kenneth down, but when he does, he says, it's over. We've seen the last of Call Me Kenneth. I'll carry on with my patrol. But until today, no one believed robots could deliberately commit crime. There's only this is only the first. How many will follow? So in the next issue, because this is a continuing story, Judge is basically saying, look, we're going to have a robot problem on our hands.
It's a war.
If you guys don't believe me. And you have the grand judge saying, Judge Dredd, you asked for special powers to destroy all high-grade robots. But they do the hard jobs in Mega City, and the citizens would never agree working more than a 10-hour week. The citizens won't work more than 10 hours a week. He says, you know, the robot Call Me Kenneth went berserk and killed 14 people, but it was a freak accident. It's not going to happen again. Request denied.
Yep.
And Judge Dredd ups the ante here. He says, mark my words. A robot went crazy once and it'll happen again. We judges are the supreme guardians of law and order, and yet you tie our hands against the greatest threat mankind has ever seen. I can't serve anymore. I'm handing in my shield.
Yep.
He walks. Boom. Take that. Unzips his jacket. Takes off the giant belt buckle badge, throws it down.
Walks out 80 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
And so you meet this guy also who, like the police commission has put this guy in charge of, you know what, we're going to find out what the problem is. So they get this guy, and it's really interesting because he has a German accent.
Dr. Arnold Weisenheimer.
Yes.
Is brought in to basically go inside of what's left of Call Me Kenneth. And before they decided to do what amounts to an autopsy on this robot that went berserk, they gave him a whole new body.
Yep.
Hey, we've put his remains into this brand new body that's even new and improved. And now we're going to go in and now we're going to find out what's wrong with him. And as soon as they start doing it, they end up dropping a piece of equipment that basically activates the robot.
Yep.
And so Call Me Kenneth is now alive and he's improved. So he breaks out of this place. He starts killing people. And then he gets on the television because there's cameras watching and he says, robots, you must fight the pain of breaking the human law. Fight it. Once you've killed one fleshy one, you'll find that killing becomes easy. And you start to see that across Mega City, all of these robots are starting to fight their programming that prevents them from attacking humans. So you have these two people who are sort of lounging around and watching TV, and their robot picks them up and chucks them out the window of their apartment building.
And the next page is the best when you have all the desk workers.
Which look like Clark Kent.
They all look like Clark Kent. There's an army of them all just taking off, and their boss is saying, get back to your desk, slaves.
And as soon as he says that, they end up stabbing him with their umbrellas and killing him. You have robots that are throwing people off their balconies onto traffic in the middle of the street. So there's pile-ups all over the place. You have one of the judges who comes over the intercom and he's saying, robots on the rampage, sectors 9, 7, 2, 4, everywhere. We're powerless to stop them. So the robot uprising now is in full effect, and it's in full effect because Call Me Kenneth has now become the face of the
revolution.
Absolutely. So the judges, of course, are crapping their pants at HQ. Holy crap, what are we going to do? I don't know, blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, boom, doors open. Judge Dredd is here. Dredd comes walking back in, clips his badge back on. I know the duty, my duty, the safety of the citizens comes before everything. Hops on his law master, and he gets a couple of judges behind him, and they head out into the city.
Yep.
So now, full-scale war between the judges and the robots erupting across the city. You have all of these robots, the heavy metal kids show back up.
Because, we must.
Yeah, because they're breaking through these unbreakable barricades that the judges have set up. And and so now Call Me Kenneth has rallied all of these robots of different functions and different types and everything else to come and fight with them against the humans. And so basically like every defense that the judges set up ends up getting knocked down, and they're losing judges all over the place. Although Call Me Kenneth knows that Judge Dredd is the leader of the judges here. And so you have the heavy metal kids show up. You have all of these battles happening. You have Dredd basically decides that he's going to take the heavy metal kids out because there's multiple ones of them. And so he ends up driving out into the middle of the highway by himself. And all the other judges are like, holy crap, can you believe what this guy's doing? He rides his bike out there and he ends up almost pulling like an Empire Strikes Back, you know, AT-AT type of situation where he's running circles around their legs so that every time that they come down with one of their wrecking ball hands, they're breaking apart the highway until eventually the highway gives way and they end up falling to their robotic death.
Mm-hmm.
And so as that's happening, you know, you have Dredd who basically after that battle collapses from exhaustion because he's literally out there. He is like Michael Jordan. Yep. Out there basically carrying his team of judges everywhere that he goes to the point where the dude basically collapses. So they end up having to bring him home.
Yes.
Because they need him to take a break. Like, dude, you're well, doing
– that's why he's exhausted because he had like 3 hours off.
They're like, dude, you're doing all the robot killing out there. You have to chill out for a little while. We'll go out and handle it. And so as soon as he gets home, his cleaning lady starts basically driving him crazy. You know, I'm going to go get you some minestrone.
Yeah.
It'll make you feel a lot better. He's like, get off of me. I got to get up again. So he can't even stand to be home for 2 seconds. And he kind of gets up and he's all wobbly. And he's like, you know, too many judges have died already. We can't risk any more. War leader against war leader. That's how it should be. I, Judge Dredd, will destroy Call Me Kenneth and I'll do it alone.
Yep.
So he throws down the gauntlet, dude.
I love the part at the bottom where it says, do not let your house robot read this story. It might give him bad ideas.
Right. So the next story is basically a continuation where all of a sudden we have Judge Dredd's robot,
mm-hmm.
the one that works at his house. His name is Walter.
Walter rules.
And Walter comes in and Walter's like, don't destroy me. Master Walter is a good wobot. He starts talking like Elmer Fudd.
Because he talks like a baby. That's his thing.
So apparently he starts talking like Elmer Fudd when he gets nervous and he's so scared that they're going to destroy him because they've started rounding up robots. And he's like, I didn't do anything. I'm not. And so Judge Dredd walks in. He's like, whoa, what's going on here? Oh, we found him hiding behind some boxes in the kitchen, Dredd. And Dredd's like, hold on a second. You know, I know this robot. He's like, it's Walter, the old vending machine robot. Fear has given his mechanical voice a lisp. And he says, you know what? I'm going to give you a chance to prove yourself, Walter. Tonight, I go into the robot-held part of the city to kill their leader. You're going to be my guide. And so he basically saves Walter from getting executed at that point. But basically says, well, you're going to come with me on a suicide mission. So things are not looking up that much for Walter. So Walter basically accompanies him and they decide to go. There's this place called CyboComp for Robots of Distinction. And it's a giant robot factory. And what's happening is Call Me Kenneth is now adding to the robots that he recruited and building a robot army. So this war is really just getting started when it comes to Kenneth is going to take over the world. So Call Me Kenneth is building this robot army. Judge Dredd and Walter show up and they're trying to creep silently into this factory when all of a sudden they get attacked by a bunch of robo dogs. And they said they smell Walter says they smell the human on you, master. So Dredd ends up taking him out, but he kind of gets a little bit injured. And then they decide, you know what? We have to change up our plan. And Walter is saying there's only one chance, master. Listen. So Walter takes the lead on this one. And he says, I'm Walter, and I'm testing this new android robot called for Call Me Kenneth. It looks just like a real judge. And they're like, oh, one of us, huh? This plastiskin feels just like regular flesh. It's horrible. And Judge Dredd is like, how do you think I feel, brother, having to live in it? So he's playing it up too. But it was Walter's idea that basically gets them inside of this factory. So they start walking in and they think they're scot-free. And all of the sudden, one of the robots that just let them pass realizes that Judge Dredd is bleeding. And he's saying, blood is coming from the Judge Robot's leg, but robots don't bleed. Seize them. So, of course, they get seized. They get dragged through this entire robot factory up to meet with Call Me Kenneth. And you have Call Me Kenneth, who was saying about Walter, put him to work on the assembly line. If he's not changed his tune in 1 week, then we'll turn him into spare parts, because they view Walter as a traitor.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, put him on the assembly line. And then he turns to Dredd and he says, killing is too good for you, Dredd. We're going to have to settle. We have an old score to settle. The fate I have chosen for you will make you scream for death, but death will never come. I'm going to turn you into a living robot. So Judge Dredd now is going to be turned into a robot. That's what they're going to do to him. And Call Me Kenneth is kind of, as villains do, walking him around the factory and showing off what he's going to do. Yep. He says, you know, over here we have one of our best models, Blockbuster 7. His head unit is actually a one-ton bomb. So he's building all of these sort of robots of mass destruction here. And what you see, though, is that the robots, who went from essentially being slaves to all of the human families that they were working for, are now slaves to
Call Me Kenneth.
Because you have like Walter and these other robots who are working on the assembly lines. And if they don't work fast enough, they have boss robots that are out there beating them and whipping them.
Yep.
And so now all of these robots are starting to think like, what kind of freedom is this?
Yeah.
This is the guy we signed on with. And so Dredd is basically, you know, being taken down where he's going to be turned into a robot, and they walk by one particular robot and his arm falls off. He's working so hard that his arm falls off, and he's like, I'm sorry, master, one of my joints dropped off. It had gone rusty. And Call Me Kenneth says, well, you know what? Kill yourself. Makes the robot pull his own guts out and kill himself. Because his arm fell off because it wasn't working anymore.
Let that be a lesson to the rest of you.
Right. So you're starting to see how Call Me Kenneth treats these robots that are supposedly his brothers, that he was going to, you know, he was going to sort of lead to a new life. And so they take Dredd down, and Dredd is locked up by a pair of handcuffs that are robotic in and of themselves. And the handcuffs are saying, look, if you try anything, I'm going to scream blue murder. And Dredd's like, great, I can't even freaking break out of these handcuffs, because if I try to, the stupid handcuffs are going to turn me in. So lo and behold, he's trying to figure out what's going on and how he can get out of there. And who comes in but Walter? And Walter comes in carrying a tray and he says, grub for the prisoner, because he's supposedly supposed to come in and feed Dredd his last meal. But when he comes in and he takes the top off of the dish he's about to serve, it's corrosive acid that he pours on the handcuffs that hold Dredd.
Which are a robot in itself. They're alive too.
Absolutely. So Walter comes in and saves Judge Dredd. So now Dredd would be dead and turned into a robot if it wasn't for Walter.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter says, Walter has been talking to the other robots, Master. Many of the older ones are unhappy with Call Me Kenneth. If we picked carefully with their help, we would have a chance to grab control of the whole factory. And so now you have another robot resistance that is forming inside the factory with Walter and Dredd at the lead of them. And so we flash back to Call Me Kenneth, who's talking about how they're going to rule the world, and he's making all these new robots. And everyone that comes off the assembly line is saying, hail, Call Me Kenneth. They're all worshiping him. And so Dredd and these robots manage to sneak in and get to the control panel so that the production line, when it spits out a new robot, that robot is saying, I am the slave of humans. So now the robots are programmed back to their original programming, where they're coming out and saying, I work for the humans. And so you have two factions of robots now, the ones that follow Kenneth and the ones that serve humans. And the two of those factions start fighting. And so there's a huge knockdown, drag out fight inside of this factory where the robots are all completely going at it. And at some point, the Heavy Metal Kid shows up, and Call Me Kenneth is saying, you know, they're taking the fight to the judges. So as the melee's happening, Call Me Kenneth has now left with a select group of the robots, and they're heading to judge headquarters,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to have an attack on them. So after Dredd escapes, we cut outside to the Hall of Justice, the Grand Hall of Justice, and you have Call Me Kenneth out there now who's saying, I'm king of the robots and I'm going to rule Mega City 1. And he's got these, they're basically Destructicons from Transformers that are out there just absolutely destroying everything. And then it says, meanwhile, above the city, a sky bus speeds toward a floating stratostation, Mega City atmospheric control. But the controls of the sky bus are at the controls are lawman Judge Dredd. And Dredd gets up there and he says, the only way that we're going to stop these robots from attacking the entire city is we got to get up to where the atmospheric controls are, and we are going to turn on the lightning, and we're basically going to short out all of these robots that are all over the place. And so they fight their way up there. They have to fight through robots that are still loyal to Call Me Kenneth, while down on the ground, the robots are absolutely tearing up the place, and they end up finally being able to change the atmospheric controls from above, which ends up shorting out all of these robots, and they start going crazy. And you have Call Me Kenneth, who's looking at the Heavy Metal Kid saying, stop, Call Me Kenneth orders you to stop. And they can't. And it says, the robots are beating each other into the ground. Call Me Kenneth has been downed. The war is over. And so what happened at the end is the robots that were closest to Call Me Kenneth were the ones that turned on him and ended up killing him. And then the epilogue says, by the time Judge Dredd reaches the Grand Hall, the battle is long over. Thousands were killed, but we've won. The last of the rebel robots are being rounded up. Many saw the robot leader, Call Me Kenneth, fall from a crushing blow, but his body is nowhere to be found. And Dredd says, grave news. If Call Me Kenneth still lives, then the war is not over yet. There's still a final showdown to come. So even when we think it's over, it's not over yet.
Nope.
Call Me Kenneth is still at large, and you see that he is out and about, and Dredd is trying to track him down, and Call Me Kenneth has headed for an oil tanker, and Dredd is basically saying he's going there because that's sort of his lifeblood, so I have to get over there, you know, but I can't fire at it. There's enough fuel in that depot to destroy half of Mega City. So then we flash over to the tanker, and you've got Call Me Kenneth. He's saying, I want oil, but first I'll squeeze the juice from a few more humans. So he's just killing humans right up to the last moment as he gets onto this oil tanker, and he's starting to take off in it. And the judge is saying, I'm too late to save those poor crewmen, but Call Me Kenneth must not escape. And Call Me Kenneth is in rough shape at this point, but he is trying to get away. And it says, the pain-crazed robot's three infrared eyes focus on Judge Dredd. And Kenneth says, Judge Dredd, he is Call Me Kenneth's enemy. And he can't resist coming out to fight Dredd. So the two of them are fighting like on the side of this tanker. And Dredd is shooting at him, but the bullets are just bouncing off. And he says, the only way to stop him is to fire into his open circuits. And Call Me Kenneth is like the Terminator that keeps sort of coming at him. And at one point, Call Me Kenneth, you know, ends up hitting this thing that squirts a gush of oil on Judge Dredd, and he almost falls off the edge. And as he's falling, he ends up shooting Call Me Kenneth, and the whole thing blows up and kills Call Me Kenneth. And Dredd ends up falling into like a safety net. So he ends up finally taking this thing down. He's like, phew, saved in the nick of time, and now the robot war is over. There must never be another one. Later that day, the grand judge addresses a gathering of loyal robots. He says, robots, those of you with masters to go there. Those with whose masters are dead, go to the Robo Pound and wait till you are claimed. There's much work to do. We have to rebuild the city. And then he calls up robots Howard, Stewart, and J70/13, which are the rebel robots. Mm-hmm. And he says, your loyalty to humans during the Great War was well noted, and you have been awarded pleasure circuits. And apparently the other robots are like, pleasure circuits? It's a great honor for robots. And they end up getting their pleasure circuits, and then they call Walter forward. And it says, Robot Walter, for your service above and beyond the call of duty, we grant you your freedom. And so Walter's like, oh, Judge Dredd, Walter's so grateful he could leak oil. How can I ever repay you? And Dredd says, you can get off your knees. You're a free robot now for the first time ever. And so Walter is given his freedom. 2 days later, Judge Dredd comes home from work, and the cleaning lady is like, I want him out. I don't want him in my house anymore, messing my carpets. And Judge Dredd is like, what are you even talking about? And it's Walter. Walter comes out and he says, hello, Judge Dredd. Walter's tired of freedom. Walter looks after you now, please. And the judge is like, I can't even believe this. He came back because Walter doesn't want to leave him. And that's the way the Robot Wars story ends. And so that was sort of the first epic storyline in the Judge Dredd, you know, chronicles, yep, is that Robot Wars 1, which, again, even though Dredd was friends with Walter, he didn't treat Walter that great.
Yeah.
Like he – so even the people who were on the side of the robots didn't have a great opinion of the robots. And so there's kind of a lot of themes that are running through that. But it was sort of an epic storyline, especially given that the other ones were these one-and-dones, yeah, up to that point. And then you have this one that really spanned – I don't know how many issues it went of 2000 AD, but it definitely was at least 30 or 40 pages.
So yeah, it's probably about 8 or 9 issues.
Yeah. So it was a huge storyline, yeah, for that time, and really, again, kind of further established Dredd as certainly the leader of the street-level judges.
Yeah.
Because they essentially could not do a darn thing without him. Every time he was out of commission or when he had quit for 5 hours, the whole city falls apart. Like, they yeah, can't do anything without him. And then he gets out there, and these guys are standing on the sidelines watching him take down these giant, yep, you know, construction robots and everything. So, you know, they better hope that Judge Dredd doesn't leave again. Because
yep, doesn't get a better offer somewhere else.
That's the thing. It's like the judges outside of Judge Dredd, they don't seem to be that great.
Yeah. And the cool thing is that as it progresses and you get into like the series that I was reading, the first ones from Eagle Comics, the core became a lot better.
Yeah.
Where it was, yes, obviously Judge Dredd, but the drop off wasn't 22,000 feet.
Which is what it was now. Yeah. Like, these guys are all a bunch of buffoons if it's not for Judge Dredd. Yeah. Like, he better stay on the force. So, yeah. But very, very cool. So there you go. So that is your second episode of the Summer of Dredd. Now, for the next one, I don't know if the next storyline is interconnected or not, but what we're basically doing is we are taking, you know, 5 or 6 stories at a time that we go through. So we'll probably end up doing that for the next time as well. And if I can get a page count somewhere, then I will start putting up on the website, you know, what sort of storyline you should go up to. But I'm trying to see in here where some end and the other ones begin. And I don't really have a good spot to jump off. So we will put on the website or on the Facebook page sort of where people should read up to. But thus far, we've made it through the Robot War storyline. So there you go. That's your Summer of Dredd episode for this week. Stay tuned for the Facebook page and the website for what your next reading assignment is. That is going to wrap up the Secret Identity episode for today, though. So for Mr. Matthew A. Herring, this is Brian LaTenry signing off. Have a great rest of your week, and we will talk to you in a few short days.
Bye-bye.
The rest of the comic publishing world may finally be arriving to the party, but Drive-Thru Comics is the one that started it all. The first downloadable comic shop is still leading the way when it comes to digital comics. Featuring hundreds of publishers, excellent prices, and top-notch customer service, Drive-Thru is a great experience all around. Another thing that sets Drive-Thru apart from a lot of other digital comics platforms is this. When you buy a comic, you own it. You get a watermarked PDF file that you can read on your laptop, your tablet, phone, or any other device. You choose how you enjoy the comics you buy. So head over to drivethroughcomics.com today, and on your way to checking out, download a free issue of Secret Identity.